But don't you think that sets sort of a negative, a bad precedence to take something that's supposed to be for one kind of program and to expend it on something that's for another program?
I mean, I wasn't here during those years.
Well, I'm
not
saying you did it. I'm saying the tribal government as a whole.
I mean, sure, it shouldn't have happened, but it did. So what are we going to do today to fix it? And right now we're saying, okay, that's our own self-insurance fund. It covered the shortfall for IDC. Let's write it off and start fresh. We're moving in a positive financial position. Let's get rid of those last two, I mean, at least the indirect side of it that's constantly being brought up for the last 6 years, and be done with it and move on.
So I think that there's another option, though, besides what you just said. If we start talking about the enterprises and we start talking about the over expenditures of the enterprises, are you saying that we used group health insurance money to cover those?
It's the same exact thing. You'll see that our group, and when we get into that, we're going to get into that during the next meeting. We're going to break down that, and we're going to go year by year and how those receivables were derived and payables and where we covered them from. We're going to do the same breakdown analysis of that.
But that's like $8 to $9 million, according to your auditors.
We'll have all that data before you for the next agenda.
But I think it's interrelated. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it is. It is. Really, truly, group health workers' comp was the holy grail of cash for the tribe in those years. It was, because that's how they were able to fund all those shortfalls, indirect enterprises.
Well, I think that the council used general fund membership money. Whatever that amount might be, I still think they had to use it in order to cover, because you're throwing everything into what's called a general fund. So everything in the dark hole of general fund, group health insurance, indirect costs over under recovery, business losses, our profits, is all going to the general fund. So when you do that, then it kind of gives you the false idea that you could do what you said, use group health to cover these other things that is not related to group health.
But if you look in that report, right, you're saying you're throwing everything in there. Yes, we see the general fund as a capture-all, right? But we're also looking at the payables in that year. So we're able to pull back group health and workers' comp from everything that's in the general fund in of itself to get a true overview of workers' comp, group health, payable, butted up against the cash that was used for IDC shortfall. And it's matching. We're outlining it, and it's how...
So wouldn't another option, though, be, I'll throw out a figure and you can say yes or no. Let's just say that what is actually due to the membership, you know, we've talked about the $11 million indirect costs and you're saying no. We're talking about the $8 to $9 million of enterprise funds that losses that the tribe had to cover, and you're saying no. We're going to talk about that later. So let's just assume that we're somewhere around, I don't know, $5 million. That was used, that could have been or should have been used for membership.
Well, let's talk a little bit about general, right? General is like your personal checking account, right? Everything runs through there. Anytime you swipe a debit card, anytime you write a check, it's coming out of there. That is what our general fund is. It's a basic checking account of the tribe. Now, if you break out individual funds associated with that, you have the trust fund over here, but it's wrapped up as part of general, but it's not, the money doesn't sit there. It is over here in a separate BIA-held bank account with its own accounting, with its own bank rec, and all the things associated with it. So when you say, so how are we going to touch the general membership money that's sitting in a trust account that is part considered general, that is over here, but it has a general fund title that's running through the operational account? And that's where it gets confusing, I think, for membership, is thinking that general fund means we're taking from trust, means we're taking from special deposits, means we're taking from FMD. And that's not the case with the general fund. The general fund is a basic checking account of the tribe. Now, there's other balances in an audit that make up that general fund, but it's not the general fund in and of itself that we talk about in terms of covering the paychecks that go out tomorrow or the contractor check tomorrow.
Well, I mean, one of the issues is that if you look at the over in the enterprises and the way that the tribe I'm not blaming you. I'm just saying the way that the tribe does its per capita calculations is they take all of the enterprises and you lump them all together into one category. And then from there, you calculate what the 80-20% percentage should be. I've reread and read and read, and I suppose maybe, I don't know if you had a lawyer's opinion or something that said that's the way the ordinance is written, that you are allowed to do that. I don't read it that way, but I'm not an attorney. You know, maybe it's time that as members, we take a look at that ordinance and rewrite it so that it's clear that you can't do what you're doing. And the reason, when you do that, when you continue to do that process, it makes it easy for the council not to have to make hard decisions about some of your losing enterprises, because you lump the profit ones with the minus ones and everything is even. When we look at the individual businesses, we see individual losses. But when you lump it all together, everybody is kind of happy. You say, we're covered. But that's not the case because, again, you're using a percentage of that money that belongs to the membership to cover those losses. Until you change the way you're doing that calculation, it's too easy to lump it all together and not worry about taking drastic measures. Because we've been going to these meetings for a number of years, and it's the same thing. We're making changes. We're trying this. We're doing that. They're not very significant changes, but every year we still see the losses. So I think you need to really change that calculation. For example, I just looked at the HFI, and I'm not trying to pick on HFI or the sawmill, but if you just look at the operation, there's a loss. There's $100,000+ loss. I couldn't find a casino report. I asked people, and they said, well, there wasn't one submitted, I guess. But the last I heard, we were talking about a $500,000 loss. I don't know if that's true or not. I just heard that. The motel, it's understandable that the motel, you're doing all the remodeling and trying to get it back up to par. But there were losses in the hotel prior to that that somebody had to pay for. Roads, you're saying roads is doing good? Great. But in the past, even the roads department guy stood up and said, yeah, we did this loss and here's the reason why. So that's why I said you really need to make some serious changes about how that per capita ordinance is interpreted, I think.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, to say that we're not worried about it, that's not correct, because there are significant changes. You know, like I said, new management. We're looking at two new managers for the casino and for the aggregate in particular. But also this accounting, you know, dedicating significant resources to help with the financial accounting and the procedures, the operations and procedures and how they do that work. So to me, there's significant changes being made at those. And that's what we have to do. I mean, we can't just sit around and do nothing. I think that some of those can still make money. Like I said, roads is on its way up, I feel. Casino, you know, we're locked into a long-term deal on the casino. We have to pay for the slot co, the new machines, for several years, so it'd be hard to close that one down. So we gotta bring in a good manager and try to get more events there, get more people there. We've been trying to do that. They're having a karaoke night soon. They've had Valentine's dance, Super Bowl party, different, trying to generate a little excitement so it's, you know, people are interested in going there for events. I think we're going to do a local artist event soon for some of the local bands and DJs and different artists, so that we can create, you know, get people there in seats. So there are changes being made. We're going to shift gears now. We're going to turn it over to Kamau Medical Center. They have a presentation they would like to share.
Thank you so much for having me.
Really quickly, I'm sorry. We were supposed to do the drawing. If you guys didn't get your surveys in, we're going to do a quick drawing. Who's got the tickets? And also, I wanted to remind everyone that HR is here. They have a table somewhere set up. They're taking applications. So we got some important jobs that need to be filled, including the elder services manager, the new positions at education. They'll be working with kids in the school. You know, get your application in ASAP. So we got the we're gonna draw the first two winners. Tell me the prizes. What are the prizes? Okay, two $100 gift cards to the shopping center and one to the gas station. Hey, Roberta, you want to draw? Let me see. Okay, go ahead. This is for the grocery store. Okay, the number, get your tickets out. 744046. 046. Last three digits, 046. You got to be present to win. Anybody? All right, we're going to draw again. Here we go. 744064. 064. All right. Grocery store, $100. $100 winner there. We're going to do one more for the gas station, then we'll do the last one after Kamau. So this next one's $100 at the Hoopa Mini Mart. This is 744054. Deacon. Deacon Ferris. All right. Let's see. $100. So we'll do the last one after Kamau. Come on up. Also, if you still haven't filled out your survey, do that. You can get your name in there.
Kamau Medical Center CEO Ryan Zumwalt.
Today's main topic, and I'm going to go over some of the infrastructure and core infrastructure that we're building and to help with services among Kamau. But I really want to jump into the financial aspect and then the compliance and regulatory aspect and talk about where we're at with those and what changes we may be looking at coming up. I think I'm waiting on just for their slide on that one. So while they're going ahead and putting that up, I'll jump into for some of the core infrastructure. Some of the core infrastructure, I talked about this last meeting, we're changing our EMR, our electronic medical record is going to Epic. Epic is the largest electronic medical record among the United States. So what it means is you have what they call their one chart. If you go to St. Joe's or if you go down to UCSF or you go now to Kamau here coming up in July when we go live, your one chart will be in one spot. You can actually see it on the app on your phone. You can see your labs in real time. As soon as they result, you'll be able to see them. As soon as a physician writes their note, you'll be able to see that instantly off of your phone, off of your computer, or you can come in and we should have a computer that you guys probably used in the lobby, something along that line. But Epic is on its way. It's a great health system. It allows for our physicians to expedite the referrals also. Referral processes and other physicians to see where you're at with whatever your PCP up here was ordering or asking for. That's one section. The next one that's a big one is the phone system. I swear that phone system has gremlins in it. I try to call places in there, and it just goes to cyberspace. It just goes nowhere. We are transitioning to Ring Central. Ring Central coming up in, I believe, by March 5th, we should be transferred over to Ring Central. So Frontiers was our last one. Bear with us during this transition. There will probably, as we're developing the lines and the pathways right now with Ring Central for who's at the end of that phone line, it may change as some of the desks may move and a few things in there, but bear with us. Goes live March 5th. Next one is Sage. Sage with our financial system. Looking at Epic and a few things like that, our organization is a lot on paper, quite a bit of the paper, which makes it really hard to see an overall picture where the organization sits financially, sits for policy, regulatory compliance, things like that. So with Sage is the financial portion, and it dovetails in with Epic. says Epic is a very robust system. It does not leave much on the table, but it needs a system to repository to set in for to help with the billing, help with looking at the whole financial picture of the organization. So those are a couple of our largest ones for electronic infrastructure that's coming down the line. Everybody's seen the, for building infrastructure, everybody's seen the professional housing. It's off and running. They've got one building up right now, and we're looking at in phase one, I think two more to go, hopefully here by July. We did scale it back by two buildings, and I'll discuss that on our financial aspect. We should also be starting on the behavioral health building here in the next month or two. We have to expend the grant funds on our behavioral health building by the end of this year. So there is a time frame and a crunch that we have to get the RFP out. I believe Harley has that out now, and get bids and get started on that progress. All right, and then jumping in, let's go next slide. Okay, Diabetes Den, or Dallas's Den. As we're looking at the Dallas's Den and we're starting to assess where the programs are at and what we need, we've had a little bit of pushback on there for with our new board and looking at where's the need in the community. So a few things we would like to do. We would like to do a community engagement and see where everybody's at. Is the engagement there? Do we have the need? Is still there? Do we want to move forward with this one? So stay tuned. We will get a time and a place here hopefully in the next 6 weeks out, do an engagement and take for everybody's input, see, is this something that the tribe wants to move forward with? Or do we want to turn it into something else on there? The senior nutrition. Senior nutrition, we had developed an MOU with the Yurok tribe for partnering, or they have roughly 40 to 50 members that come up on a daily basis and utilize our senior nutrition. Right now, we're at about 190 participants, utilize that on a daily basis. We were able here recently, we got more warmers, we got more cooling tables to be able to help support that amount of volume at this time. However, it's still a financial cost to us, supporting tribes that are not here on HOOPA. And that's coming out of our budget here as HOOPA's budget. So with that, the Yuroks have proposed, we came to an agreement on it. Right now it sits with the Tribal Council, as Tribal Council is looking at a larger MOU with the Yurok tribe. So stay tuned. We also paused any of the implementation of the policies for senior nutrition until that MOU is done. Part of that, too, want to get some of the input from the community about the policy and the feeling of where we want to go with who qualifies and who doesn't on there. Last one on this slide, Diabetes and Wellness Center. Diabetes and Wellness Center, in part right now, has moved over across from PUD into the One Legend Way. We believe the actual opening date should be coming up here in a week or two. They're just waiting for the mats to come in to be able to move the exercise equipment. And then that program is looking to actually grow. For years, I've talked about it last year, our pre-diabetes in the community is significant, and it's grown about 347% over the last 5 years. I mean, that's a huge jump in our pre-diabetics within the community. For us, our diabetes program is kind of percolating along. It's not meeting the needs of the community. We need to be into the schools. We need to be in with our youth. We need to be working with our members on diabetes. And then we probably need to even look at the grocery store and what do they offer on there. Do we have things that are more palatable to the genetic genome of the members, the HOOPA members, versus the processed foods, because we know a lot of that spikes the sugars and a few things in there. So stay tuned. We actually brought on board a physician that's board certified in obesity and food is pharmacy out of UCSF, and that's Dr. Shoko. Along with keeping on board is Dr. Buller, who has her lifestyle medicine. So between the two of them, they're helping formulate an outlook and a model for our diabetes and growing that program even more. So next slide. This one just talks a little about Epic, and it wraps around. I chatted a little on Epic. Epic is very, very robust. Before we go live on Epic, we will be pinging the membership. You guys will want to come in June and start getting the app put on your phone if you need some help with Epic and logging in. So that way you have all that at your fingertips so you can see your own data. You won't need a call in. You can actually, from home, from your phone, from making appointments from your phone. There's so much that incorporates in on this. So stay tuned. We will set out a time frame in June and probably start to do probably part of the PCMH or the health fair event is getting everybody registered during that time. Next slide. All right, billing and budgeting. This is a piece I want to jump into. As this last year, stepping into CMAL, we had a lot of missing expertise in there. We had a lot of departments that were operating on skeleton crews, minimal aspects in there, or no one within that position. We didn't have a rev cycle person. We had minimal people in our AP department just to barely keep the checks for cash coming in going. So didn't have a whole lot of labor force or infrastructure to look back and see where were we at totally financially. Now we do. We have a CFO on board. We have the right clinical people. As we started looking back, and we have some help with RevCycle right now that just came on within the last month, as we started looking back and diving into the RevCycle and AR and things on there, we saw that there is AR that goes back to 2012. I mean, that's a long time on there. So with that old AR, we know we're not going to be able to collect back that far. We can collect probably back to about 2020. Most insurers will give us grace period all the way up during COVID because there was a lack of staff, a few things like that. So we could probably go back that far. Knowing that we have to go back to 2012, that period we have to write off. It has not been written off in bad debt yet. So we're looking between about 1.5 to maybe 2 million that will need to be written off into one of our audit years that's still open on there, which will probably either be 23 or 24. With that being said, that still has to be approved through our board, and we also have to get that approved through IHS. However, we've already talked at some early conversations with IHS. They're looking at doing a bulk batch audit to write that off, and then we just have to get it on our books. However, that does impact us, and I'll talk a little about that here coming up in a minute, about where it goes with some of our projects. And jumping in, the finance, and so budgeting wise, we budgeted this year a flat budget in August. When we budgeted in August on the IHS compact, we budgeted at 1.9 million for the tribe side to hold from the IHS compact. Our budget was approved, moved forward, and then wound up the tribe held an extra 500,000, which in this budget puts us 400,000 short on there. So we're looking at doing a budget modification. And then where do we find that money within our budget? So the finance team right now is pulling different areas, seeing what vacancies have been open for a while, and seeing where we can compress some to be able to make us flat on our budget for this year. So stay tuned. You'll probably hear a budget modification coming back around. But these some of these small things impacts a larger ripple on there. And where that ripple goes is as we're looking at the clinic expansion and getting funding for the clinic expansion, when we have to write off $1.5 to $2 million, the banks look at that and start questioning, you have bad years. Why do you have bad years? This one's pretty easily explainable. It's over time, but they still question our financial accountability. As we move forward and looking at closing some of the audits and timely, those are a few things that the banks look at too. We have the $3.3 million that went to housing. We should be able to get $1.3 of that back. We have to get that first payment of $1.3 back by March 3rd, or it looks as if we were just loaning the family, essentially. The banks will look at that, and they can pull. It's the loans are not baked in yet. They can pull those loans, and that's upwards of $12 million to support that clinic expansion of more room, more space for us to be able to meet the volume of the physicians and the volume of the staff, the membership that's coming through. As I presented in the last meeting, our membership visits have gone up substantially. We usually sit right around 20,000 visits a year. We went all the way up to almost 29,000 visits this last year. This is not outside people or new people being added into the clinic. This is clinic members. A lot of it is deferred care, or as we brought on specialists, you'll see your primary care doc, and then you're seeing the foot doc, and then you're seeing the next doc. So it's increasing the number of total touch points or reoccurrences through the year per member, which is great. That's what we want. But we need more space. We need more space. Been working with St. Joe's as we increase, or that clinic expansion gets done. They're looking at bringing up their cardiologists, pulmonologists. So we have an area for them. So that way it reoccurs and allows for our members to be seen by a specialist here in the community versus going all over the two hills on there. So that one's on the financial part. So we'll keep you updated as finances keep coming through. But that is a piece that potentially can impact a larger ripple among the organization. So as we looked at our budgeting too, this goes back into our professional housing. I believe we would have had 9 buildings. We scaled it back to 7. We decided with the board recently that we will just spend the funds that we have currently within that budget. So, but we can come back later if we get funds and continue to build on those ones. We're just decreasing the overall size of that footprint at this point in time. All right. Next slide. Med staff. So some of you guys are hearing a little bit more for the longer wait times. In November, we lost Dr. Basiri and Dr. Collins. They went back home to Texas with their little one closer to family. Rightly so. I mean, those are things I've looked at as I've traveled the country too. Then Dr. Walsh just recently retired, and we lost Ballard and Collins. Yes, ma'am. He currently is. He's still here, but when you don't have him here, it's harder to see that turn of patients, for the day. So with that, it's created some of the delays as our members have had to be seen by other physicians. We were recruiting during that time. We have a few locums coming in. They should be landing. I think we had one start last week, one starting here in a week or two, and then one up in early March. And that should help replace that shortage and get us back up to par where we were back in November. So bear with us. As you guys know, it is hard to recruit in this area. Our whole goal is to recruit them and keep them. This last year, we were able to turn, I think when I started, there were only 3 full-time physicians. Now we're upwards of the majority of our physicians are full-time, invested for a long time. These are 5-year-plus contracts, which is great. That's what we want them to do. Buy into the community, be here with us, and grow with us on there. So like Dr. Shoko, Dr. Buller, they're on board. Dr. Shoko signed in. She goes, I want to help with diabetes. This is my passion, my love, and specialties. So as we grow those programs. All right, next slide. Jumping in, the mobile medical van, just a little heads up on that one, mobile medical and outreach. Mobile medical van, as we started deploying it during this winter, we found that it leaks. And it doesn't just leak, it's as if someone turned on a hose in there. So it has some warranty repairs. You will only see it out right now while the sun's out. If we have a chance of rain, we keep it in its shed for the moment. So it is inhibiting a little bit of our movement there. Our outreach team, does need to grow, but with this new budget mod, we may have to compress down this year for the moment. Dr. Young is seeing as many patients as she can see, along with Melissa and our RT on board, along with our CHRs. I think there's roughly 600 people that have signed up for the outreach or medical outreach for when and as they need it. One of the other specialists we brought on board, we just recently signed on a wound nurse. This is a very specialized wound nurse that can be able to see our members in the clinic and potentially also at home. I've known this of the skills of this person for a long time. They come from Vibra Healthcare. Anybody that's been down there knows they deal with very large wounds at that organization. So this is a specialty that's very hard to drive or to recruit for. The nice part is they are a local tribal member. So pulling them back in home with their family and their husband, which I was really excited for. Jumping on down, next slide. PRC. As we look at PRC, PRC, we know, has issues on there. And I've dived in, I've met with a few of the community members and talking about how did PRC, when it ran best, how did it run? What did it look like on there? Some of the comments that we got with PRC is there used to be a person in the clinic that would come around to you. As soon as the physician wrote their order and said, you need to go out, here's a referral, they would come meet with you and talk to you about what's covered, what's not covered. I went, wow, okay, that's a great thing. Let's see what we can do to get that added. So as we're looking at labor force, we're trying to recruit to get another person to be able to help with that. And they'll be in the clinic and start to help with PRC. The other part that we, as I stepped in, we realized with PRC, PRC was having, they were accepting all the referrals and then sending them out. These were non-clinical people deciding at what point this referral goes. So if I had cardiology and the person next to me just needs dermatology for acne, which one goes first? They're non-clinical. They're just going down a stack. So as we looked at that, we started and said, great, let's put a nurse in there for right now, and they'll help decide what goes first on that. What's the highest need? As we transition to Epic, these referrals will go out instantly. As soon as your physician puts in that report and says where it wants to go, you need to go to UCSF, it just bypasses PRC, it bypasses us, it's already there to down to UCSF, which is gonna be phenomenal. That's the best part about Epic. With that, PRC will just have to touch base with the member. If the member wants to go to a Hollywood doc down in LA, they just say, well, great, that's great you wanna go there, but here's all it's gonna, PRC can cover of that by policy. It's the member's choice where they wanna go, but PRC is only gonna pay so much to there if it does pay on that. All right, next up. I think I touched base mostly on that. Probably pause here for any quick questions that may be up.
Sally Slater. Okay.
Yes, ma'am. With the billing department, we struggle with some of the staff who are in there, meaning volume-wise or time. We've had a lot of FLMA this year, things like that, where we've had staff out, so it's created shortages within the department labor-wise. Plus, we need to grow some. We have two new people entering into the billing department that want to grow within. So they're wanting to learn other entity or other skills within the organization to get in there. So hopefully coming up, we will be better off. Being advised on that right now is currently the CFO and the person that's helping us with rev cycle on that. I agree with you, Sally. Yep.
Apparently, whoever is advising is not working, so you need to find somebody that's intelligent enough to run your billing department. That's what I'm saying. Changes have to be made.
Yep.
And sometimes it's hard, but you got to make those changes.
I hear you on that one, Sally. Yep. We've got CRIB coming up. We met with Summit CRIB, met with IHS on some of the billing when we were down there and talking to them about their programs, some of the ideas around that. So stay tuned. I definitely hear you. And that is one of the directions our CFO and our rev cycle has touched base on is as they're just starting to really dive into that department.
So Matthew Douglas, I am a Hoop Tribal member. I also am the broadband manager for Acorn Connected, which is a division of the Hoopa Valley Public Utilities District. I've heard several tribal members, and by show of hands for the council, how important is it to invest in local companies, tribal-owned companies? Who agrees? All right. So My question's coming to you because we had to have a conversation about certain, I guess, technical opportunities that we can have with Kamau. One of them being the phone system, another camera system, and potentially managed IT. Coming to the meeting, hearing your infrastructure update, you've already moved on a phone system, but there was no communication with a tribal entity on even just being part of the bid process. Ooh. I was wondering what we can talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, we put the bid out. It went out to wherever they post on our internet, and we got 3 different companies come in on that one. But and that's where we went with. And so it was posted for its period of time. And then if I'm circling around to the IT piece, I know you and I have talked about IT, and that is a direction we want to go. I'd prefer to do IT here locally, as we've talked in the past. You have the all the servers here locally, so we're not having to ping outside. So if there's anything that goes down, it's actually a faster turnaround, as we have lag time right now. Our IT service is questionable in my previous history on there. So as we want to build forward, so stay tuned. We will have the RFP come out here. Just need to get past a few things on our regulatory compliance and a couple of other things to get caught up on. So a month or two, and we'll have that one out.
So to follow up on that, the 2 main infrastructure projects that seemed like you had on the software side, one was Epic. So you're saying that that's going to be locally hosted on-prem?
Correct.
I do know that RingCentral does not offer an on-prem solution. They are 100% cloud-based. Your current phone system is also 100% cloud-based. When you consider the source of how to get that connectivity in order to have those conversations, you're going to run into the same exact problems. And so one of the things that I need counsel to understand is that there needs to be an internal Hoopa tribal member IT representation in terms of when you go after these projects, do they have the best interest in mind of the tribe? There's a digital sovereignty aspect to this. There's technical jargon that I guarantee you don't know about that would somebody in my position would be able to inform you about that you wouldn't necessarily be considering. Right now, Kamau currently outsources their IT. I don't know that you have an internal IT member that is a Hoopa tribal member that is fighting for what this tribe wants. Right now, correct. I feel like the consultant can kind of put the wool over your eyes and say, this is what you need because of this. And then they lock you into subscription-based processes that you're kind of beholden to them until you get enough funding to be able to refresh the entire system.
And that's one of the things you and I talked about back in August is want to move away from our current IT so that way we do have that infrastructure here locally. Trying to push for it, but there's a lot of other processes that we had to jump through to make sure the stability of the clinic for the financial piece, and then regulatory. I didn't bring that one up. We had regulatory audits in 2016, 23, and 24 of Joint Commission that were unaddressed on there. So as the team is circling through, the 23 and 24 audits are 170 pages. So it's really drawn down quite a bit of the C-suite team and that, but the IT aspect we're circling around to, just got to give me a minute.
So I guess we need to improve the RFP process, like the community said. How does the local community kind of get aware of that? But on top of that, since we did have the discussion and you did have mine and Linnea's information, you could have reached out.
Yep.
Thanks, Matt. I know we, you know, as a tribe, we definitely could do better in that area as a whole. I know that I had signed in my letter recently for their new projects. I had directed them, you know, the council approves with the condition that all the supplies that can be sourced locally through tribal businesses be used. So we could keep an eye on that. I know one of the project managers was trying to buck that. I was very disappointed. We had Mercer Fraser over there pouring concrete instead of our own. Well, come to find out, you know, maybe they couldn't get a hold of somebody at Rhodes during that time. We do have new management there now, so I'm hoping that'll be better. But it's an ongoing battle. We have to always do that, and hopefully we'll see that improvement. So thank you for bringing that up. Danny?
Danny Jordan. Mine is along exactly the same lines, but even broader than that. The reason why I included that language of plan, the tribe has the authority under self-governance to plan, design, administer, and implement. Those are the four criteria that are included in the tribal self-governance law to give tribes the power to take these projects over. We can do the same thing here. We can't, it is kind of ironic that Kamau is doing an amazing job compared to what it used to be. Our original budget in 1993 for the Hoopa Health Association was at $2.6 million. It's now tremendous. And so many departments and reaching out so far. At the last general meeting, I seen Kamau's proposals for construction, and I was wondering then, how many are going local, right? They're all going to outside. My point is exactly the same thing. We need to, what is causing this is how we have drafted our procurement policies, including Kamau, that we need to have meetings with local people, local contractors, and help them, have them help us plan, design, administer, and implement. So, Joe, you just mentioned the Mercer Fraser, right? We didn't have any forethought about that. We're a cement company, right? We have the ability to plan that fix of that, right? And these are not just projects that are just dropped, you know, out of the sky. They are planned. They are, you know, that was probably at the last general meeting. My point is, thank you for doing what Kamau is doing. And you know more than anybody, there will never be enough money to correct the social, economic problems that are coming from poverty, from drug issues, from decades of just suppression of Indian people, right? We have the ability to fix that, but we have to meet tribal member businesses halfway. Our local contractors are not Danco. They're not Pacific Builders. They're not Humboldt Fence Company. They have ability to leverage financing on the outside. Our people could have help design these projects in ways that we can bring these projects locally. If we can get a control and a handle on Hoopa economy building, we will be able to begin to change the healthcare trends in Hoopa. Without it, we're going to do just feeding our own problems. So thank you for your question. Thank you for what you're doing. Let's fix the problem. The problem is regulation.
Let's add to that one, Danny.
We can have Ryan respond, and after that, Heather Campbell has her hand up on Zoom, so we'll go to Heather after Ryan's response.
Just a little bit to Danny's piece on building for the tribe and the rest of that. In this last year, we've been able to grow by over 50 more jobs. Jobs that were opening, we were able to fill them. We were able to, when I stepped in, turnover within the clinic was up into the 70s. 70 percentile, we're down into the low 20s. At a point in time over this, all the way up until about mid-fall, we were in the low teens. So it is exciting to see that in historics, we were around 150, 160. We're well over 200 now employees. And so we're providing, these are local tribal members that have filled into those positions. So this is exciting on that aspect.
Kim Davis.
Compared to non-tribal members? I believe, I haven't pulled it recent. I did ask Liz on this one compared to the upfront. She said it's only out of the 50 plus that was like one or two that were non-tribal. The rest were, when we looked at it last year out of the 200 and something, it was 13 to 15. It's a really low percentage. The rest are all tribal members.
Okay, Heather Campbell, are you there?
Yeah, thank you, Joe. Last year, Stephen reported for Kamau that the dialysis center was on the horizon and that they were actively looking for a building, and he had anticipated that it might be done by December. So I'm wondering why it's now a question and not still in the works.
It can be done. We could have had it done. There were some delays in with the changeover of the board back in September. As the board was changing over, we were unable to get decisions made in a timely manner, which kind of delays that out. And then with our new board, there's looking at questions of do we want to engage the community to see if there's enough interest that we want to go forward, because this is an expensive center. It will wind up costing roughly $2.4 million a year that we will have to cover in physician visits and a few things like that. Built the ROI and it runs relatively flat, but it's still a very large cost.
Right, but it seemed like last year it was already kind of allocated, that cost. So is it not allocated anymore, and what's the potential or that it's actually going to happen?
Potential that it can happen. I mean, we have the ROI for it. The board has asked if we would stop and get community engagement to ensure that the interest is there. If the interest is there, we can move forward. And at this point in time, we have the building. It would take us roughly, once that trigger's pulled, about 3 months to about a month and a half to remodel the inside of the building, and about 8 weeks to ensure staff training.
Thank you.
I would just note on that, you know, we talked earlier about like a long-range strategic plan for the tribe. And this is a good example of why that will be important, is so that when boards or council or other leadership changes over, that we don't, switch everything out all the time. You know, we have these long-range goals that we continue to pursue. Instead of, you know, going in one direction and then you get new people come in and you start to go in a different direction, you know. I do think that there is more discussion that should happen with all of our departments, but with Kamau in particular, the dialysis den. I'm hoping maybe some of my fellow council members can help me out on this one. I know that there are concerns about the long-term viability of that center financially, you know, because the startup costs and getting that thing going is one thing, but being able to fully staff it and keep it going for the long term is another concern. And so there's always a cost, not just the cost of, what you're spending, but what is that going to cost other programs? You know, what is it going to take away from as far as Kamau's other operations that they have? And so that was a question that was raised recently by some of the new board members and some of the council members. So that's just trying to share information with you guys on that matter. I don't know if anyone else wanted to add anything.
I have some.
Councilman Jordan Haley.
What's the percentage of our population that's pre-diabetic?
I'm remembering my I
think.
Yes, it is.
Something
it's,
like 80%.
It's significant.
Go ahead, sorry.
Where this dialysis den does bring in, we've had conversations about pulling resources, maybe reallocate those resources to preventative care. A dialysis den brings resources with it on there. There is some perks to the back end of it. It will bring Stanford's renal pharmacy on there. So as an example, when our PCs are PCPs, they're primary care docs on there. If you get a pneumonia, they might start you on an antibiotic, but not knowing that antibiotic, if you already have kidney disease, could be fuel on the fire. This is common across the board. They're not a specialist on kidneys. They just know that antibiotic kills that bug and I'm going to go ahead and prescribe it. Where having a renal pharmacy on board that can help look at all of our population within there, they'll start to go, no, this person, especially when Epic's in, they'll go, no, this person has some renal disease. We want to change that antibiotic to XYZ because it's not going to hit the kidneys as much and it's not going to progress their disease process as fast. So that's one entity. The other entity that we get a nephrologist and a nephrologist, a specialist. So Dr. Matthews is the one that oversees 90% of our population. He's the one that will oversee this program. And with having him in up here, he can help with a lot of those prescriptions and bringing the infectious disease doc to start looking at, you know, what are we doing when someone gets septic? What do we do when someone with dialysis, if you go drink a Gatorade on a summer day, that's very bad. That blows up all the fluid, and all the electrolytes in there are very harmful. You know, what do we do with that? Do we bring in a cardiologist? He has that access. That's what comes with that program.
And so with all of that, I was working at Kamau years ago, as a lot of you know, maybe. I was the facilities director. And yes, there's going to be some cost. Yes, there's going to be a lot of work. But if our population is 80% pre-diabetic, we've lost, I mean, AWOC, what are the lives that were lost on the ride over the hill when there was that wreck? We lost two tribal elders. One of our tribal members was in a coma in the ICU. Yes, there's going to be some costs. Yes, there's going to be some work, but we're such a huge, extensive problem. I think the dialysis den is something that's very much needed. Yes, you know, nothing that we ever do is going to come easy. There's going to be, you know, some hurdles and some obstacles and everything else. But I think, you know, as HOOPA people, we're supposed to take care of our own. We're supposed to take care of the most vulnerable. It will have its challenges. But at the end of the day, can we put a price on one of our individual members' lives? I don't think so. I think every single one of our people are priceless. Yes, it's a challenge, but I think it's a challenge that needs to be met. It's important. And I don't know if most of you know this, but the dialysis place out in McKinleyville is supposed to be shutting down in 2 months. Now where all of those people go? Eureka's not going to be able to take all that overflow. It's an important thing. I know that it's kind of a hot topic right now, and I don't know who and what is supporting, not supporting. I know myself. You know, I was a firefighter for many years, worked in EMS, and I think we do whatever it takes to keep our people safe and alive. But that's just me.
Mr. Chairman. Councilman Ryan Jackson.
The only thing I would comment on the dialysis den is the previous council passed a resolution directing the board to develop the diabetes den and move forward with that. I'm not sure if the new council that's here now isn't in support of the dialysis den, then should probably rescind the motion or rescind the resolution. Otherwise, it still stands. And you know, I understand there's a changeover in the board, but at some point, the resolution of a tribal council should mean something. And if it doesn't, then I'm not sure what we would be doing. It's the same with the 32-hour work week. Some of the stuff that we've been doing, we're, you know, directing the board to do one thing or the other. If there are questions, like this, maybe I haven't attended all of the meetings, but it's the first I've heard that the cost associated with what's going to be required is coming into question. Well, like Danny said, the first budget of the medical center was $2.3 million. Now it's what, 40? 40, maybe 50? I mean, there's times when you guys have a lot of money in the bank, and I know where they're. I mean, if you look at the expenditures of administrative staff, for instance, that don't actually deliver healthcare but help to administer the program, those costs are through the roof. So I'm not suggesting that that should change, because I support that and the way that the organization is moving. I just have a hard time hearing that costs associated with trying to actually address renal disease or the things associated with diabetes are too much for us to bear, and so we shouldn't go down the road of investing in that and move towards prevention. Well, prevention, I agree with. We should be doing that anyways, and that should be part of the overall mission statement or priorities of the board. I'm looking at Ryan. I apologize. But the board is here also. Anyway, so I'm just going to raise the issue of the resolution that was passed directing the medical center and the board to make sure that the dialysis den was being invested in and would be a part of what was going to be happening in the future. If that isn't what the tribal council wants to do now, or the board, then they should rescind the resolution. Otherwise, it stands, and you're breaking the law at a certain point, and I don't know if that's appropriate.
Thank you, Councilman. On that, as I said, I'll build anything the tribe wants. But I also have to follow for what my board asks for there and the council asks. So whenever that comes about, as I said, as soon as that trigger's pulled, we're 3 months out.
Councilman Joe Marshall and Ryan Jackson.
I have one comment. This council was under the impression it was getting completed. So hopefully those board members are in here that are against it or had stopped it. It's moving forward.
Okay, yeah, this was the first I'd heard that it was being delayed or something was amiss.
As a board member who's been there since the first part of December.
KMC board member Marceline Norton.
I'm not aware of any recent decisions by the board to not discontinue the dialysis center. I, for one, have asked for overall plans, and when I first got on, because I base my opinion on facts and information, data information. So I was asking for an overall plan, and we just recently, I think a couple of meetings or maybe the first part in the latter part of January, we got that. And Ryan, you yourself has reported, I think, to the council and to the board that in your discussion with Toyabe, who has a dialysis center, that it almost bankrupt the clinic and it almost bankrupt the tribe. I don't know what kind of a dialysis center they have. I understand what we're working on is more like a home dialysis. And so again, and then also, we don't have, or I haven't seen, the funding that would start this first year. You just recently submitted a letter to IHS requesting $2 million for the first year. That has not come in yet. I understand, I think we've got a little over $200,000 from Vesper. But, and then, you know, the numbers keep switching back and forth. You know, at one point I heard you say 60 possible dialysis people, 30, now we're looking at 8 or 9. So, and the other thing, the other concern that I have is that we will be serving very, very ill people. I want the best care. I don't want MAs who are not experienced with especially very ill people. We need the best care. We need a nurse there, and I understand a doctor will be in and out at times. But I, for one, as a board member, has not raised the question that the dialysis center is not on board, or I'm not on board with that. We're asking questions.